On this last Monday of the month, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Lots to discuss in politics. So let's get up to speed with help from WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. Some roadmap for discussion. We'll look at the redistricting-related litigation and what's going on in the state Supreme Court as it sets political map boundaries for the next decade, campaign coffers in the race for governor with the primary set for August. And we start with the state's fiscal position and what to do with a $3.8 billion surplus projected by June 2023. Where do you want this money directed? How would you feel about a tax rebate for every Wisconsinite? What about sending it to education, as the governor proposes? 800-642-1234. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief, co-hosts the WPR Politics Podcast. Sean, welcome back.
Hi, Kate.
Well, we got a rosy report there from the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau in recent days, projecting that nearly $3 billion more than expected. On top of the that, there's $1.7 billion in the rainy day fund. So it really appears state coffers are flush. What's going on?
What's going on is that the economy and tax revenues have grown faster than the Fiscal Bureau projected the last time they did these revenue estimates, which actually happened last time too. I mean, you've seen this a few times since the COVID-19 pandemic began. We had one set of estimates that were pretty dire and, you know, looked like the whole economy was going to fall off a cliff, basically. And then as we kind of bounced back from that, there have been a series of good revenue estimates from the Fiscal Bureau, you know, meaning there's more tax revenue coming to state government. And this was the latest of those. And so it's kind of significant because it happens not right ahead of when the governor is scheduled to deliver a budget, but right ahead of when the governor is scheduled to run for re-election. So You have this big pot of money sitting in this, or projected to be in the state's general fund. And that gives the governor and his opponents a lot of stuff to talk about.
And we're going to talk about that race in a moment. But these new numbers, they raise estimates for sales tax. They raise estimates for income tax. Is this connected to a low unemployment rate?
It's the Fiscal Bureau mentions that for sure. It seems like if you're going to put, I guess, simplify it, it would be a kind of a consumer driven, a tax bump here. And it is tied to the national economy as well. I mean, like any of these revenue estimates are tied to the national economy. Our Fiscal Bureau, our budget office, relies on this report that's put out by this firm that studies the global economy. And they study, you know, what's happening nationally. The Fiscal Bureau kind of contextualizes that for Wisconsin based on what actual tax reports are and what they're seeing here. And so a lot of this is kind of national based with the Wisconsin focus based on, you know, what we have in the bank to begin with and, you know, what they say we're going to have at the end.
Well, let's talk about what lawmakers want to do with this, what the governor wants to do with the money. Governor Evers proposed a plan to use more than half of the surplus for tax rebates and to boost education funding.
Because that surplus won't do us any good just sitting here in Madison until the summer of 2023. We have the resources to make sure that every family and every community is doing just as well as our state's economy.
So, Sean, what are the nuts and bolts of Evers' proposal?
The biggest part of it is a tax rebate of $150 per person, which would, you know, cost around close to $900 million, I guess, $816 million. Then you've got another big chunk of it would be set aside for education, $139 million for higher education, $610 million for K-12 education. A lot of the K-12 education stuff would be aimed at keeping local property taxes low. Mm-hmm. And there's a $103 million income tax credit for caregivers. And it's, you know, $1.7 billion altogether. So not spending down the entire projected surplus, but a sizable proposal for sure. And the $150 million tax credit for everyone kind of bears resemblance to something that Governor Scott Walker did in his last you know, year before his reelection, he had a good revenue estimate in 2018 and proposed a child tax credit at the time. So yeah, it's not like exactly the same circumstances. Of course, this is a bigger projected windfall. Times are different, and it's not exactly the same tax credit, but you are seeing some similarities here. It's an election year. There's money in the bank, and you've got a governor here saying, let's give it back to residents of Wisconsin.
Sean Johnson with us, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief, as we check in on the latest developments at the Capitol. You can join in 800-642-1234. There is some movement afoot by Republican State Senator Roger Roth, who is working on a bill to eliminate the state's income tax. What do you see here on the response by Republicans to the surplus? And would eliminating the state sales tax have momentum among Roth's colleagues?
So what you're seeing from Republicans so far is a very firm no to the governor. And again, many of them that were here anyway, voted for Governor Scott Walker's child tax rebate 4 years ago. But last week they were very firmly in the no camp. They're saying, we want to hold on to this until the next budget. So, you know, you heard the governor reference 2023 there. That's when, if you hold on to this money until the next budget, that's when you're talking about something happening, because the next budget doesn't take effect until July 1 of 2023. And the next budget might be delivered by Governor Tony Evers. It might be delivered by someone else if Governor Evers loses in November. Clearly, that's what Republicans are hoping for here, because they want to do stuff that Governor Evers won't support. Potentially. He has signed big Republican tax cuts, including in this most recent budget. But if you're talking about a bill that would, you know, eliminate the income tax, which is something that you're seeing floated quite a bit now from, you know, some members of the business community, some new conservative groups, they're pushing that. That's going to probably be a problem, because you're going to see Democrats saying, well, you're creating a more regressive tax system where it's more borne by people who are paying sales tax, you know, are going to be less well off. And so they're going to feel the brunt of this new tax system if you end up doing that.
Let's move on to the governor's election. We saw that former U.S. Senate candidate Kevin Nicholson has officially announced he's running. How is that race shaping up with having Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish also in the race?
It is shaping up to be, the word bruising comes to mind, but it's got that feel to it, a bruising primary. There are, you know, primaries all the time. You can look at over the course of history, you know, Governor Tony Evers won a primary in 2018. Governor Scott Walker won a primary in 2010. Candidates can emerge from primaries and win the general election. It happens all the time. But there can also be primaries where the two candidates really fight it out and focus on each other instead of on the candidate that they want to beat. And the thing with this primary is Kevin Nicholson is a very aggressive candidate who has adopted this outsider mantra and kind of revels in it. It's his political oxygen. You know, he is going after not only Rebecca Clayfish in this primary, but basically, you know, the system. You know, he's going after Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, you know, the most powerful Republican in the legislature, going after the state Republican Party. He's basically saying it's all part of a failed machine and he's the one who can fix it.
And so, he's backed by GOP mega donor Richard Uihlein of Illinois, who tends to fund these anti-establishment candidates.
Absolutely, which is what makes it all the more significant. He's just not a voice in the wilderness making these claims, or some, you know, long shot candidate who might pull 1% in the primary. When you have that kind of money behind you, and the Uihlein family, Richard and Liz were the number four donors in the nation in federal races in the 2020 election cycle. That is some real money and can amplify Nicholson's voice quite a bit.
Sean Johnson, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief, as we discuss what's moving in political circles, the state Supreme Court is expected to issue a ruling on the legislative and congressional district maps sometime in the near future. We'll look at what's happening in the courts. And what about redistricting? Have you listened to Sean's podcast series, Mapped Out? What do you want to know about redistricting as it stands in Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Sean Johnson here on the Ideas Network. We take political issues one at a time with WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Former conservative Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman was hired for a Republican-ordered probe, as you know, of the 2020 election 7 months ago. It was supposed to be wrapped up in October. And earlier this month, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss told WISN-TV about a new timeline.
I've been very clear with Justice Gableman that I want to have legislation on the floor to be able to pass no later than the end of our session, which concludes in March. So that means I really need his report by the end of February for us to be able to utilize that as part of the evidence that we present to the people of Wisconsin as to why we need to make the changes that are necessary in March.
How do you feel about this investigation as it's unfolded? Do you think Gableman's interviews should be done in secret outside the public's purview? What bills are you tracking in the legislature? 800-642-1234, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring on a caller now. John is joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, John. What is on your mind?
Good morning. What's on my mind is that Wisconsin's Department of Revenue charges delinquent taxpayers 18% interest on amounts they owe. These people are the poorest among us. They are very vulnerable people. Wisconsin probably pays around 1% when it borrows money, and yet it charges its most vulnerable citizens 18%, which is confiscatory. It's as bad as a credit card, and it's way more than the IRS charges. So I would propose that some of this surplus be used to reduce that rate from 18% to something that is less punitive.
John, it looks like you've looked into this issue. Do you know how other states charge for delinquent taxes and the interest rate in surrounding states?
Wisconsin's at the top of the list. I know of no other state that charges more than 18%.
John, thank you. Sean, your insights here.
John's done more research on this than me. I don't want to offer an uninformed analysis here, and that's what it would be, because this one hasn't come up recently, at least at the Capitol.
John, thank you for the call. Let's move on to the courts. And we heard Speaker Voss there adjusting the timeline for what he wants for the Gableman probe. This is original budget, $676,000 in taxpayer money. When will Gableman conclude this investigation, Sean?
We do not know. I mean, I think that's all anybody can say at this point, because we haven't been given any signs that it's about to wrap up. And, you know, it's almost February. You heard the speaker there say we want it done by the time the legislature adjourns in March. The legislature's last general business or regular session day is scheduled for March 10th. So you're not getting really regular updates from Gableman on how things are going. And in fact, there are signs that he is expanding his investigation. You know, he's issued a number of subpoenas.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, if he wants to pursue these subpoenas, there are courts involved there, you know, there is a court case in a judge's courtroom who basically has not shown like an incredible eagerness to move forward with this case in like an expedited fashion. And there's this, it's involving subpoenas of the mayors of Madison and Green Bay,
mm-hmm.
which former Justice Gableman wants to do. And they have, fought those because of the way that he wants to pursue them, you know, in private. is something that they don't want to go along with. There's a case and there's a hearing in that case in April, you know, like late April. So yeah, the courts are not making this any easier for Justice Gableman to move ahead, but that's partly because of, you know, what he's pursuing is, you know, it's questionable whether he has that authority. In fact, there's an argument in multiple courtrooms now in different ways that Gableman doesn't have the kind of authority that he's asserting in this investigation.
We also saw Attorney General Josh Call continuing to attempt to block or at least narrow down the subpoenas of the Evers administration, Elections Commission. What is the latest there on Gableman's request for all documents held by the state related to elections and voting machine companies?
When it comes to the subpoena that Gableman has issued to state officials, those are also kind of up in the air because a judge in that case didn't step in and block the subpoenas, but that's because she said, there's no sign that he's going to like try to enforce them. Mm. There had been talk that that Gableman might try to throw officials in jail, especially the mayors of Madison, Milwaukee, if they didn't comply. And they backed it, you know, Gableman has backed away from that now, possibly because it's just not legally possible. But that's one of the many questions, I guess, as his subpoenas and sort of the net that he's trying to cast grows, there's all sorts of indications from courts that he can't go that far. And here, you know, we've got March 10th approaching pretty fast.
Sean Johnson with us, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief, as we round up the issues in state politics, get up to speed. Let's take a call on this, 800-642-1234. Rich is joining us from Rhinelander. Hi, Rich, go ahead.
Hi, perhaps I'm mistaken, but the same legislators who voted to authorize the spending of not quite three-quarters of $1 million, but like $650,000 or $680,000 to fund the Michael Gableman investigation are now putting the kibosh on Governor Evers' plan to return some of the monies to the people of the state. I'm sorry, it's becoming embarrassing to vote for Republican candidates under these circumstances.
Rich, can I ask you what you have seen so far out of the Gableman investigation? What have you noticed?
A lot of contradictions in terms of a man who seems to be speaking his conscience. That's what he wants me to believe, Michael Gableman, but who lacks a clear conscience.
Rich, thank you. Sean, contradictions. What do you make of that?
I would say this money for, I suppose anytime you talk about government spending money for one thing and not another, you could draw it as a contradiction. I think this $676,000 that was set aside for Justice Gableman is certainly something that has been and will be scrutinized. I think if you want to look for a clearer contradiction, you would look at the way the parties have approached this surplus, depending on where their governor sits. You know, like in 2018, Republicans were pretty quick to turn around and spend a surplus on rebates. Now they're not. In 2018, Democrats were pretty quick to criticize that kind of move. Now they're behind it. I think that money for Gableman, it's nowhere near as much as what the governor is calling for in terms of tax rebates or in terms of the budget surplus, but because of what it's being spent on and how it's being spent, it's definitely going to get scrutinized. And we don't know if it's the end of it either. It's $676,000 right now. You know, it may grow depending on where this investigation goes and how long it lasts.
Also filing this in the 2020 election category, and we'll land on this here, the U.S. House Committee investigating the Capitol insurrection, they've subpoenaed two Wisconsin Republicans. What is going on with former Republican Party of Wisconsin Chair Andrew Hitt and Kelly Rue, the chairwoman of the 8th Congressional District GOP and a DePere council member?
Yeah, this was something that was handed down on Friday, subpoenas from the January 6th committee. They said that they want, they sent it out to people who posed as alternate electors or false electors in several states, including Wisconsin. And so what happened in Wisconsin was the day that the actual presidential electors met for Joe Biden at the Wisconsin State Capitol, and on December 14th of 2020, you had this Republican slate of electors, the false electors, who also met. And they have said, Andrew Hitt, the former state GOP chair, said that they were doing this to preserve legal options for President Trump. Because, you know, as you remember and are reminded of frequently, you know, the president is, you know, former President Trump was frequently criticizing the election, seeking to overturn it. And we'll so have, these.
We'll have to end it there, Sean. Thanks for joining us. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Library Legislative Day is set for next week, and this is a time when librarians from across the state meet lawmakers to discuss issues facing the roughly 380 Wisconsin public libraries. They have a fact sheet for lawmakers. One thing that jumps out, 1 million uses of public internet computers in 2020. Librarians, what do you need lawmakers to understand about your needs on the ground? What legislative policies are impacting you? How is a library doing in your community? How do you use it? 800-642-1234. Nyama Reed is president of the Wisconsin Library Association. She directs the Whitefish Bay Public Library, has been a librarian for more than 20 years. Nyama, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. So what is the number one thing you want lawmakers to know and to take away when you talk with them next week?
I believe the biggest thing for librarians coming in and library lovers who go to Library Legislative Day is to show that libraries are there. They are open. We are serving our communities in a very different time. Some libraries had doors closed, but they were still there serving things, doing the Wi-Fi, doing internet searches, book bundles, all sorts of things. We're there and working harder than ever to serve our communities so that they can stay educated and entertained, whichever they're choosing.
The word pivot comes to mind specifically for libraries. You know, when you look at the numbers compared to pre-COVID times versus numbers you're seeing coming out in COVID times, what is jumping out at you?
As far as number of uses?
Number of uses or just, you know, anything that is quite different based on where you were at pre-COVID.
I would say, if you look at raw numbers, say, in comparison to 2019, they may be down. They've come back up since 2020. But if anything, they're more high quality uses because we're working so hard to provide them. And for the people coming in, they can truly be a lifesaver, whether that's helping them apply for a job or having mental health breaks to get that latest Grisham book or to be able to get out of their house with their child to get something to come and pick up a take and make craft. People really truly appreciate it because the libraries have been a spot during COVID. They could still go, they could talk to someone on the phone, and it really has not just gotten them through their day, but their last 2 years.
Sounds like libraries are taking on many more responsibilities beyond the books. We also saw Racine Public Library hired its first full-time social worker in September. What do you want people to know about libraries as a social safety net?
Libraries across the state have filled many resources. Some have had outdoor food pickup for those who might be facing food insecurity. They're helping people with applying for jobs. I looked online too and found such as Oshkosh had a vaccine clinic. Oshkosh also worked with the day-by-day warming shelter to assist homeless veterans during that time. Smaller libraries might be helping with help finding people energy assistance online, all sorts of different things. And even before COVID, libraries have helped with, if someone comes in and we notice a regular patron might be starting to have some issues, if we can spot it, and we approach them and ask, do you need some help? Can I call someone for you? So it's that personal one-to-one relationship you have with people, aside from just the referrals, that helps us notice when our residents and our community might need some help, and we reach out to fill that gap that they might be experiencing. And that has simply ramped up during COVID librarianship.
But some pushback here. Do you think that libraries may be overstepping their mission of information sharing and providing information? Are they trying to do too much?
Well, the case could be made for that. The other side of that coin is, do we need to do too much because that gap is there and maybe it's not elsewhere? Oftentimes when these things happen, we are still sharing information. I'm not sitting here and being someone's therapist, but I might be a kind ear, and then I can offer them the referral, find the information, because we're better at finding information more quickly, or we're tapped into those resources that we can help people find it. I'm not going to go and actually turn on their electricity for them, but I can help connect them with someone who might help them pay their bill during a time of need, or we know about what government assistance programs are out there to help them get through. So I think it's expanding and forever pivoting to help the people that come in, but not necessarily doing more than what we should, because we're here about helping. And so how we help changes from the 1950s to the 70s to now.
Do you think this kind of help, this type of assistance for your patrons, is here to stay?
It's here to stay as long as it's needed. And then again, as the needs change, what we offer will change. But libraries will always be here with books, with music, whether years ago it was on vinyl and then it was on CDs, and now we have it downloadable. Help and how we help people can change too, whether they're coming in person on the phone or maybe via text message if they're looking for a referral. So I believe the help will always be there, just as libraries will always be there. Our format may change and the topics may change.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with the president of the Wisconsin Library Association, Nyama Reed. We're talking about their annual Library Legislative Day coming up and the issues facing libraries. With your insights and questions, 800-642-1234. Nyama, one barrier libraries are facing is Wi-Fi access. What challenges are libraries going through with Wi-Fi?
Well, Wi-Fi, and then also actually wired, you know, if you think of the lines in the ground, and you think about, you know, the state of Wisconsin, you know, you're in Madison, I'm here in Metro Milwaukee, and some people may not be able to afford the internet in their homes, but they can come into the library and they can use a public computer, or some of the libraries actually check out Wi-Fi hotspots for the week and they can take it home. So overnight, they can still work on whatever they're working on. Whereas if you get up more into the north in the areas that are more spread out, it's hard for them even to have the hard fiber into the library, into the homes, for people to have the Wi-Fi there. And it might be a half an hour, an hour to their nearest library. So during COVID, if you have your child doing online schooling, but you have no internet connection or not a good internet connection, that can really impact things. So there's a large priority for libraries in the state of Wisconsin is expanding that broadband into the northern area so that everyone can have equal and equitable access to broadband, to Wi-Fi if they need it, to be able to go in and apply. You know, almost every job application now is online. So if you don't have access to the internet, how do you apply? So we are working on trying to, at an actual policy level, move that along so that we can get everyone equally and equitably connected.
Early in the pandemic, in those early days, people were sitting in library parking lots. Libraries were trying to extend their Wi-Fi so that they covered the parking lot. Are those things still going on?
They are, and thankfully, due to some of the government ARPA funds, various libraries across the state, including us here in Whitefish Bay, were able to get stronger Wi-Fi antennas that wouldn't normally be in our operating budget for this budget cycle. And so for us, it extended the reach from, say, the curb line right in front of the library to the far end of the parking lot. So people could come and sit in their cars, albeit with their own device, and use our Wi-Fi when the building was completely closed. Now those things are still out there. If someone's not comfortable coming in and using the library in person, even with masks on, they could come and use our Wi-Fi from the parking lot or after hours. A lot of libraries started leaving their Wi-Fi on 24/7. So for people who were working during the day or couldn't make it until maybe 10 o'clock at night, they could come and their kids could still do their homework from the parking lot.
Let's talk about funding. State lawmakers reduced library system funds by 10% in 2011. It has not fully been restored over the decade. How do libraries continue to support services without increases in funding? What do you see with the funding situation?
Well, I will say, thankfully, last year's biennial budget, the legislature did vote to give additional monies for this year and next year, restoring that money that was cut 10 years ago. The compounding of it might not be there, but that was a huge boon and blessing for libraries across the state. The other aspect is local tax dollars might be flat due to some laws that were put in place a decade ago. So we do end up having to either fundraise in different ways or increase charges perhaps on copies to try to bring in a little extra money. Otherwise, it's about being creative. If I need to cut some money because the housekeeping bill went up, then I start looking into other areas where we can trim a little without impacting staffing or collections to the public. It's definitely still at a very tight moment. So the increase that the legislature approved last year comes at a very good time in order to at least keep us whole to where we are right now and moving forward.
But it's
definitely constrained still for a lot of libraries across the state.
And you still see libraries putting on their own fundraisers or perhaps having to look at their fines that they have instituted for people who don't bring their library books back?
That could be. I will say there is a large movement nationally, not just within Wisconsin, to go fine free. La Crosse went fine free a few years ago. And that's where there are no fines. If you don't bring the book back, we still charge you for the book. But if you bring the book back, there's no overdue fine, even if you had it an extra 5 days or 5 months at some of the libraries. That is a revenue generator for some of the other libraries who can't afford to. Some of the libraries in the state are operating on a budget of $50,000 or less, some of the smaller libraries. So to give up maybe $5,000 in fines would be 10% of the budget. If there isn't another revenue stream there to replace that, that becomes cuts. So every library looks at it and goes, can we afford to do something like that? I don't know that anyone is increasing fines, but maybe they're finding new and creative ways to have book sales or starting a foundation, such as our library just created, and our Friends of the Library book sale, continue to have book sales online on eBay to make up for not having them in person as much. So everybody has been getting creative in how they're doing it during COVID.
Wisconsin Library Association President Nyama Reed with us, our guide to the priorities that librarians are bringing to the state capitol next week as part of Library Legislative Day. What social services does your library offer? Do you have a favorite library program? Are you concerned about book challenges or funding issues facing your local library? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're finding out what are the leading issues facing Wisconsin's approximately 380 public libraries as they provide programs and resources in these pandemic times. Another notable number, 6.9 million. 6.9 million e-books, e-audiobooks, and videos downloaded in 2020. The association says that's the sixth highest number of library-sponsored checkouts in the world. Still time to talk about library priorities, what's going on in your community library. 800-642-1234. Wisconsin Library Association President Nyama Reed stays with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's talk at let's talk about book bans. The American Library Association said in a preliminary report, it's received 330 reports of book challenges, each of which include multiple books that happened last fall. And they called it unprecedented. That was reported out yesterday in the New York Times. Why are these book challenges happening at a pace not seen in decades?
Well, I would say, just as a lot of different issues, mask enforcement or vaccines, a lot of things are very heated right now within our country due to issues above and beyond just libraries. And so libraries become another aspect where people can come in and voice their opinions. And right now, if people are stressed out or very heated about what is going on, and maybe they feel they don't have as much input in the larger world, they're coming in and trying to have input at the local school board level, at the local village or city level, and also at the local library level is the way I like to look at it. And so they're coming in an organized fashion at some libraries with different titles to come in and challenge them as a way to be seen and heard and try to affect the changes that they believe are necessary.
Once upon a time, it was, you know, Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye or Catcher mm-hmm. in the Rye, J.D. Salinger. What mm-hmm. books do you see are being targeted today?
Well, I will say, per the news, The Bluest Eye was just banned in December or January from a library, a school library in Missouri. So that's not even a once upon a time one. That one's still there.
Hmm.
Right now, the latest one that's in the news is the graphic novel Mouse, which tells about the Holocaust in a graphic way using mice and rats. And that one was recently banned at a school district in Tennessee. And that one has gotten a lot of news over the last week, especially with Holocaust Remembrance Day just being last week. In libraries, it can typically be things on topics of LGBTQ or diversity and race. It really can span the gamut for what is coming in, depending on the titles. A lot of them are geared towards children's titles or teen titles, not so much as people coming in and trying to ban the adult titles.
I wonder if you see an undercurrent of these book challenges politicized, that is, like being driven by legislation or by politicians seeking to align their message with their voters on one side or the other. And maybe in the end, you have the librarian or the reader or the teacher caught in the middle. Can you relate mm-hmm. to that?
I could certainly relate to being caught in the middle. And I will say, having been a librarian for over 20 years, I've dealt with book challenges through the whole thing. And we follow our policy, we look them up. You can be more inundated at this time, different libraries have been. And it can be difficult when you're having these discussions where you're trying to serve everyone. And some people take offense at what it is you're doing in order to serve other people who want those topics. And it does put us in the middle. We're happy to help everyone. It's difficult when people come in and vociferously yell at us or come into a meeting and make it untenable to hold the meeting if there's lots of fighting, as we've all seen in the news for school board meetings in the last year. And that puts us in the middle of trying to serve everyone and having it become more personal, or we're just not geared towards that for libraries. We're here to help people, and taking the heat can be difficult for some of us and impact morale.
We have the director of the Whitefish Bay Public Library, president of the Wisconsin Library Association, talking with Nyama Reed on the State Capitol Report, looking at the issues facing Wisconsin libraries and patrons. With your insights, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Philip now in Appleton. Hi, Philip. What would you like to ask about ebook restrictions?
Yes. Yeah, I had a question about arbitrary ebook restrictions. I read online that libraries are limited to only one license that they purchase, and there's a limited amount of checkouts of a license before they have to rebuy that license. Is that true, and has that affected the Wisconsin public library system?
That is true, and it really depends on which platform you're using. That particular model tends to be used a lot on OverDrive or Libby, which is the 6.9 million e-audiobooks. A large part of that is Libby across the state. We have a statewide collection for everyone, and it's really set by the publishers and the providers, and they kept changing. At least it's been consistent. But depending on the publisher, depending on the title, it really varies what that particular lease looks like. We don't own those books when we purchase them. For the e-collections, we are leasing them. So they will say, your latest copy of Grisham, you can check out 50 times, and then you have to check it out, or you have to purchase it, lease it again. And I believe the thought on that is, if I had a physical book, after 50 times it might fall apart and I'd buy it again and they'd get more money. So they're looking at that lease as, how do we keep on having a revenue stream from them having to repurchase it?
Philip, does that make sense?
Yeah, still seems arbitrary, but
are you Philip, do you check out ebooks a lot?
I would if it wasn't such a long line for them. I mean, I guess I'm doing what the publishers want, which I'm end up buying books, because ebooks end up having, you know, 30 people ahead of me in a hold line, and, you know, I want to read that book. So.
Good point, Philip. Thank you. Nyama, any suggestions there when you get on this really long line? You're in the queue, but you're 30 deep.
It can be. And I will say, you know, part of that too is, so it's one copy per hold. The cost of the ebooks when we purchase them are significantly more if you go on Amazon and buy it for yourself. Again, because the publishers are looking at it and saying, oh, you're going to have however many hundreds of people trying to read this book. So, you know, we can't afford to buy them unlimited. When I'm helping someone at the desk and they want the latest novel and it has a hold list, I'll say, put it on hold. But hey, did you get the one they put out last year? You haven't read that one? Let's get that one now. There's no hold list because now it's a year overdue, and you'll enjoy that book while you're waiting for the newest, hottest one. So we try to work that way. Some libraries have other platforms such as Hoopla, or where it's on demand. And that's a different model that actually is even more expensive for the libraries, where we pay per use. It's $2 to $4 every time someone checks out that book, but then there's no wait list. So you could see, particularly with Appleton being one of the larger libraries, I don't know if they offer Hoopla, but you could check and see. It is offered here for all of Milwaukee County. And then you get so many credits per month that you could use for that. So all of us are trying to do and offer different things in order to meet people's needs. But I would say to Philip and Appleton, if you're looking for that hot book, put it on hold and see what's there from last year or 2 years ago, or a classic that you haven't read yet that you could read now while you wait.
Philip, thank you for that question. We only have a few seconds left. Nyama, is there a program that you'd like to see every Wisconsin library offer its patrons?
Oh, gosh. Off the top of my head, and this was a grassroots effort by a librarian in another state, it's called 1,000 Books Before Kindergarten, and research has shown that children who have 1,000 books read to them before kindergarten, and it can be the same five books 200 times each, as we all know our toddlers, those children go into school that much more ready and have significantly scientifically proven more literacy skills and vocabulary and are ready to start school. So a lot of libraries here in the state of Wisconsin do 1,000 Books Before Kindergarten. You can stop in and see if they haven't, maybe suggest it to your local library, because there's a ton of resources just to start it on your own and really make that effort to read to your toddlers and young children, even your babies, as they get ready for school, because it's that interaction and that reading to them that sets them up.
Nyama, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Nyama Reed, president of the Wisconsin Library Association, on the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network. If-